Hello and welcome to the 8th episode of the Radix Copycast. I'm Emily, Radix's Research and Marketing Executive, and today I'm joined by Fiona, who's our MD and Lead Copywriter here at Radix.
Hello.
We're also joined by David McGuire of Lungfish for this episode.
Hello, it's nice to be back.
It's great to have you back. Before we start, I'd just like to make you aware that we're currently running a listener survey, which we'd really appreciate you taking just a few minutes to fill out. The link for the survey will be available on the blog at radix-communications.com in this episode's notes. In this episode, we're going to be discussing tone of voice, from what we mean by tone of voice, and what to do to ensure a tone of voice that is authentic and the right one for a brand. First today, I was hoping that Fiona and David could establish what we mean by a tone of voice. Is it more than brands just being consistent in the manner they see things and what they say? David?
Yeah, I think that's kind of a nice way of putting it. It's equally, you know, having a voice, you know, is being consistent in the way that you express yourself and the kind of language that you choose. You know, it's kind of having a personality. So in the same way as, you know, a lot of brands will go through a very detailed sort of design process and kind of then have a usage guide visually to give consistency so that when a customer is kind of interacting with that brand, it all looks consistent, it all looks right, it feels right. For me, tone of voice in a copywriting is making sure that they have some consistency with what they're reading as well, so that again it's identifiable and it makes sense with who they are, their positioning, and how they're addressing the audience.
I think this is quite an interesting point because, I mean, I've been in copywriting for 15 years, and it's only really recently that I realised there's a difference between tone and voice. I've always thought of tone of voice as being this one thing, and this is the way that the brand writes and uses its voice to talk to customers. But I understand that they're two different things, and I don't know if, David, you're kind of able to explain the difference between the two.
I'll have a go, yes. It's certainly something that I was made aware of through the work that MailChimp have been doing. They have a whole website about it. I believe it's voiceandtone.com. I think it was Kate Kiefer-Lee that put it together or that led on it. But the idea is that as a brand, they have one voice, essentially, you know, which is to do with their values and, you know, kind of the clarity that they use. But they have a range of tones which are situational. So the tone that they choose could be more formal, more informal, more or less jokey, but within certain parameters. So in the same way as there'll be consistency with how I speak when I'm in a meeting or an interview, you know, versus when I'm down the pub, you know, there'll be things about those that are consistent and then things about those that are appropriate to the situation. Yeah.
So I think this is a really important point because I think a lot of people think that a tone of voice has to be consistent for a brand across every single situation.
Yeah.
And you see companies that are using inappropriate tones just because they feel that they have to use the same tone of voice, whoever they're talking to, whatever situation that person's in, whatever it is they're trying to communicate. So I think the idea of having a range of tonalities for different circumstances is a really good one to bear in mind. And especially for us as copywriters, it's really important to think about, who are we talking to? What is it they need to know? And what is the kind of tone that we need to take with them to get that information across in a way that's clear and probably not patronising? Because I think a lot of the way we see a lot of companies going now is in this kind of friendly conversational tone, but they take it too far.
Yeah.
And they use it in situations where it's not appropriate.
Oh, yeah. I had an error message on a website the other day, and it was a thing that I'd invested, you know, I was filling in this form, making some payment or something, and it took a lot of time, and then it got lost in the ether, and the website came up with oops, and I'm thinking, I'm sorry, that oops just made me want to throw my computer out of the window. I mean, it was, you know, so I was so frustrated and so angry, and they're giving it all this friendly oops, woo, yeah. We seem to have got something wrong. Well, isn't that silly of us? I think it, you know, and it was completely inappropriate. That's actually the thing that the MailChimp website, this voice and tone site, there's a standalone site that's just for their writers. That's the thing that it does really well, because the tone that they take is all linked to it, and it stems from what the reader is doing at that time, and therefore how they are feeling. So the jokes that the little chimp makes. You know, it gives you some guidance on how to write those. But then it also gives you guidance on how to, for example, how to write an error message. You know, and it acknowledges at this point your reader is probably quite annoyed, so don't make jokes. You know, and it's as simple as that. You know, they're still, you know, the way they write is still clear, it's still friendly, they are still talking about, you know, they're still using the first person and the second person, not the third person, so there are consistencies. But, you know, but it's just, write in a way that acknowledges that they're not feeling too playful at the moment.
Yeah.
And that's the thing that I think, you know, it's absolutely, that voice and tone website really nails it for me.
That's going to be a really great website for any copywriter to look at, because I think not very many companies have gone into that amount of detail of thinking about how their writers need to write in a given situation. I mean, often we get briefs where there is kind of tone of voice direction, but it's just general kind of brand attributes and do we use you or do we use the third person? Or do we use the active voice? Do we use the passive voice? But there's not really any guidance on different situations and how to handle them. So that sounds like a really good website for any copywriter to have a look at, that MailChimp one. And I've been thinking about this quite a lot recently. I mean, you gave the example of the website that comes up with oops when something doesn't work. And I was thinking, because we work in the technology sector, so there seems to be like two types of technology companies now and two types of tone that they use. So there's your traditional B2B technology companies, your kind of old school, maybe Microsoft, EMCs, IBMs.
Mm-hmm.
And there's your kind of new cloud-based businesses. And it tends to be the new cloud-based businesses that are using this kind of friendly conversational tone. And I think that's because people aren't engaging with a human when they're buying from that company. So the website and the product itself has to kind of take the place of a human interaction. Whereas with a kind of old-style technology company, you're always kind of dealing with a salesperson or a consultant or someone who's coming in to build that rapport with you. So the rapport gets built there, whereas with a cloud company you kind of have to build the rapport through the way you talk on the website. And I think that's somehow, that's where it gets taken too far, because they think they have to be conversational and friendly in every situation.
Well, that's really interesting, because I mean, I've always sort of felt that it was partly about that and it was partly about, you know, brand positioning. And sometimes there might be something to be said for a cloud company, because what they offer is less tangible somehow, to kind of make themselves seem quite established and quite a safe bet, almost to kind of compensate for the lack of anything sort of physical that you get. It's all software as a service. But, you know, the point at which you build rapport with a brand, I think that's another really interesting way of looking at it.
I think it's quite an interesting way of thinking about it. And also we're seeing the more traditional technology companies struggle when it comes to being more friendly and more conversational. So really struggling with, because the company voice and tone is very logical and educational and informative. It's not about creating an emotional rapport with the brand. It's about educating buyers about what this product is all about and what you can do with it. Now there's this kind of, they know they need to be on social media and they need to be on Twitter, they need to be on Facebook, and there's a kind of sense that they need to have a different tone of voice for these platforms. But there's an awful lot of struggle about, do we have a separate tone for this, or do we change the entire brand voice? And like, we see, you know, a lot of months of work going into, you know, how do we talk on social media? It's really interesting, yeah. So we see the cloud companies sort of struggling to be serious.
Yes.
And the traditional companies struggling to be a bit lighthearted and friendly.
And I think that's where authenticity really comes into it, the kind of Emily mentioned earlier. You know, it's the old thing, I think Quentin Crisp coined, you know, it's having style is being yourself, but on purpose. And that's something that, you know, that I keep coming, you know, coming back to, and I really love, and I, you know, but I think that, for example, part of the reason that quite a formal brand would struggle on social media is that social media it's social, it's very one-to-one, it's personal, because it's geared for people to talk to people. Now, if your brand is the voice of God, you know, having the voice of God speaking on Twitter, actually, that would be brilliant.
I think there is that God on Twitter.
Yes. But God, I forgot, God's on Twitter, isn't he? But, you know, it's difficult for
the brand, with all the weight of the brand, to be chatty and to make small talk. And maybe I think that's a place where, instead of starting to bring in inconsistencies, because then it all looks lumpy and inconsistent and wrong, you know, that then maybe you have people, named people, who are, you know, agents of your brand, and so that you're talking to a person and you're building rapport there, as you say, you know, with the way that they've always done sales and things. So on social, it's a person that you're talking to rather than a brand, and the person is then expressing, you know, they're consistent with the values of the brand, but they don't have to use that weighty tone all the
yes,
time.
Yes, yeah. And I think that one of the difficulties with the weighty tone is, especially on Twitter, you've got multi-syllabic words and you've got product names that go on. I mean, you could use up a whole tweet with a product name for some of the businesses that we work with. So
yes.
Finding a way to use shorter words and talk about products that's against the kind of style manual, because the style manual says you have to spell out this whole product name. And so you have to sort of find ways around that as well. So yeah, it's an interesting struggle that some of our clients are going through. And I think it becomes even more of a struggle when you're thinking about the types of global business that we work with, and that they're not just communicating in English, they're communicating in tens of languages, and they have to enforce a kind of voice and tone across those languages and across those cultural differences as well. I mean, it's a mammoth task.
Yeah, I think that's where something, you know, your localization of it really comes into it, you know, that translation is not enough, because you know, if you start to say, you know, oh yes, we will be, you know, we will be taking this tone of voice worldwide, once you hit the cultural differences, you know, you can really kind of end up in the soup.
Yeah, and one of the kind of hallmarks of a conversational friendly tone of voice is the use of metaphor and visual imagery and kind of being playful with the words, which is not something that translates easily into other languages. So you have to get away from the whole idea of doing translation, as you say, and get more into, I think it's called transcreation, where you have got not translators locally, but you've got local copywriters who are able to take those ideas and transcreate them into a similar sort of idea that works in that language and for that culture.
Yeah, because I think that, you know, again, it's the same thing, you know, with the brand. You know, a brand might occupy a slightly different space in different markets. You know, I did a piece a while back where for one market, for the European market, introducing kind of overtones of sort of ancient Chinese imagery, you know, worked really well, you know. But then the moment this thing had to get used in Japan, you know, in a tech environment, anything, you know, Chinese in that, you know, is not going to play well, because it would be associated with, you know, to them, inferior technology. So it's something where people locally have to really sort of, you know, appreciate those nuances. But it's all to do with, you know, the brand positioning as well. You know, because in some places it's just not appropriate to be, you know, you can't necessarily say, well, why, we're a really playful brand, because there might be some just where you're not taken seriously.
For the last discussion in this episode, I was hoping we could look at some technology brands who do tone of voice well and why it works. Fiona?
Yeah, so I think if we're looking at the technology space, that the classic one that everybody thinks of is Apple, which set itself a precedent way back with its Think Different ad. And for years and years after that, became the kind of clear and human and emotional, empathetic voice in the technology industry, which is something that it's still striving to do. But I think there's a general feeling that it's gone off the boil a bit, especially with its new long-form ads that I know you've had a look at as well, David.
Oh, they made me want to cry. They were so bad. You know, I was kind of being a bit of an Apple fanboy. I think where they went wrong with it is, you know, these new ads, and they kind of, you know, they start talking about how they see everything differently, and this is what we do. It's all self-regarding, you know, and you know, it's like they've had to think about why they're cool. Just when they were doing the I'm a Mac, I'm a PC stuff, they just were cool. They didn't have to explain that they were cool, they just were.
And do you think that this is something to do with Steve Jobs no longer being with us? Because when he was there was a very strong association of Apple with this man, with this person. And that now kind of Apple's more like a company, and therefore it's maybe its copy seems less authentic because you're not associating it with this one person.
I don't
think maybe talking to you through the copy.
I don't know. I didn't really associate their old copy with Steve Jobs particularly. Mm. I think if it's had an effect, maybe they're insecure. You know, as a company, they seem to have maybe a bit of a crisis of confidence now, and maybe that's coming through. That this long form copy, it's not to do with the length of the copy. It's just to do with the bizarrely self-regarding content. You know, that it's almost defensive. You know, because they're under attack. So I think partly they've got this confidence issue where they're all, you know, if Apple have to publicly restate what they stand for, oh, we're made in California, you know. Yes, you're telling me that because we all know your stuff's made in China. Mm. You know, it's quite obvious, really. You know, but equally then, but it's also that Samsung recently, you know, last year or two, have come in and tried to kind of steal a march by becoming that actually, you know, now Apple's for conformists. If you're a real non-conformist, you know, with your phone, you know, a Samsung on Android is maybe where it's at. Maybe that's where the cool people who think differently really are now. And that's something where, you know, and I thought I was going to be able to come in here and say, see, Apple are getting it wrong and now it's Samsung's turn to get it right. And in their ads, I think they have been. But then I went to their website, and this is where we were saying about where consistency is important, because I expected Samsung UK business website was going to be, you know, all of this just effortlessly, you know, you think differently, you're in business, let's chat, you know, and it would be right. And it was just all kind of lumpy business jargon and, you know, trying, you know, it was like kind of very, very corporate speak, with a thin veneer of friendly scraped over the top. And I was just like, oh, could they not get it right? Could they not just be consistent?
So this is where the authenticity thing comes in, isn't it? If it's not extended across all of your brand properties, I guess, then it's not authentic because it's not the voice of the brand.
That's exactly it. That's exactly it. You know, if, you know, a customer or a prospect doesn't care whether they are watching a video or reading a piece of copy or looking at a website or in a store or whatever it is that they're doing, they're not thinking, currently I am a mobile app customer. Currently, I am a retail customer. Currently, I am a business customer. You know, they don't think of themselves and categorize themselves, and they don't categorize the channels that they're using to communicate with you. As far as they're concerned, they're just communicating with a brand. Why wouldn't it be the same?
And I think this is something, I mean, this is another example that always comes up, and it's not in technology, but Innocent Drinks is the classic example of where you take a brand voice. It's not everybody's favourite brand voice, I can't stand it, but they have extended it across absolutely everything. So if you go in and look at their careers website and, you know, here's our ethical statement, it's all written in that exact same Innocent Drinks voice. And it does lend a sense of authenticity, but I mean, in their case, it also can come across as patronising as well. So it doesn't always work, but at least, you know, they've made the effort of establishing, this is our brand voice, we're going to use it everywhere across everything that we do.
Because the thing about brand is, you know, brand is what enables you to have a relationship with a company like you would have with a person, and to build, you know, an emotional, you know, not necessarily, well, possibly an attachment, but, you know, it would connect with a brand on more than just a rational transactional level. Yeah. And if you go to one place and then another place and it's completely different, suddenly this hip, trendy company is talking about itself in the third person using all these multi-syllabic, you know, what's going on? Yeah. You know, in the same way as, you know, if I'm a corporate customer and then I see something for another, you know, another audience group and it's wildly different, it's suddenly like, oh, you're a bit two-faced, aren't you? You know, because you can't guarantee that, you know, your customers aren't gonna see the stuff that's intended for your investors, you know, and that kind of thing. You know, it needs to be consistency, because otherwise you can just kind of go, oh, that's how you talk about me when I'm not around.
when I'm out of the room.
And that's where it does become difficult for a big brand that has a lot of different audiences and a lot of different kind of customer segments to have that single consistent voice. And that's where, going back to the MailChimp example, that's where your different tonalities come in underneath the same brand voice.
Yeah.
And I was just thinking of, you know, technology brands that I think have got it right. So what, the one that I really like is the cloud software that we use for our financial accounting here at Radix, which is a company called Xero, which really has understood who its audience are, because it's talking to people who run businesses and own businesses but don't know an awful lot about finance and more excited about the business than about numbers.
Yeah.
So they've got this really nice, simple website that kind of reflects that they're as excited about your business as we are, as the customers are. So it's kind of aspirational and it's nice, but at the same time, the software is really clear, really easy to use.
Mm.
The same sort of friendly, we're excited about your business, comes across in everything. But at the same time, it's not patronising. It's not one of those wacky patronising cloud businesses. I can really tell that they understand me, which is great.
That's good. I should have to look into that. I think a lot of the time, because what you notice is inconsistency, or you notice when something's inappropriate, something when people have worked hard on it, sometimes you just don't notice, and it's into the background, it's just there, it's just appropriate, it just does part of the job. And the thing with, you know, it kind of not being wacky and stuff, I think that like Oracle's tone of voice is actually quite consistent and quite appropriate. You know, I think that's kind of, it just sort of sits there in the background and does its thing, because, you know, they're not, hey, we're crazy Silicon Valley guys. It's, you know, because a lot of the time they're talking to, you know, big enterprise level serious executives, and without being too jargon about it, you know, there's enough jargon to show that they get it too, but, you know, but it's all quite, it's quite clear, but it's just nicely understated. Although, I mean, if you want something that's, you know, that's just a very obvious, clear tone of voice. I mean, not a technology brand as much, but in the technology space. And, you know, I can name check them because they're your clients and not mine. But Velocity Partners, I think, are, you know, a company that kind of just gets noticed by saying things just in a very consistently plain speaking, not kind of excessively quirky, but just a bit quirky. Just doing it with a bit of style and a bit of panache and saying what they mean and being a bit bullshit.
Yeah, definitely. And I think Velocity Partners do an absolutely brilliant job of brand voice. I think possibly it's easy for them in the sense that they're a small company. So it definitely is the authentic voice of people within that business.
Yes.
And so I think it's, not to do down anything they've done because it's brilliant, but I think it's relatively easy when you're all people in one room together to establish what your view is on everything and what your perspective is and to really take that stand and make it into a consistent kind of world view. Whereas for a very large global business, it's a lot more difficult to try to create that consistent brand voice that at the same time sounds authentic, whoever's saying it, wherever they are in the world, whatever language they're saying it in.
It is difficult, yeah. I think, you know, you sound as if you've got someone in mind who's getting it wrong, actually. Is there anyone you'd care to name and shame? Get it out
there.
Yes,
in fact, there is. Just because a recent email, I mean, this is not in the technology space at all, but I bank with First Direct, and I have banked with them for many, many years. And in the past, I've found they were one of the pioneers in banking of being kind of friendly and conversational. Again, because they didn't have branches, so they needed to communicate with customers via the internet and via phone banking. But just from a recent email that I received from them, I think they're now taking that a little bit too far. So so I'm sitting at home and I receive this email from First Direct, and first of all, the subject line says, "Fiona, you're the pickle in our plowmans," which surely is taking the piss. I mean, surely, yeah. It's just going a little bit too far. And then you open it up, and then the headline is, "Don't tell everybody, Fiona, but you're our favourite," in huge letters. And at the same time, my husband's sitting next to me.
Yeah.
His laptop pings. He's got this same email from First Direct. "Don't tell everyone, James, but you're our favourite." You know, exactly the same time. So immediately it looks cynical.
Just saying, if you're not sitting next to each other, I think that's a really good headline.
You like that headline, yeah. But then it goes on. This email goes on. "You're the jam in our donut. Everything we do it for you. You're the wind beneath our wings. We have nothing if we don't have you." It's like, yes, yeah.
I entrust these people with my money.
And then the same week as I received this email from First Direct, I got a letter from them, very stern letter saying, please make sure that you're going to be able to pay off your mortgage at the end of the mortgage period that we have with you. And a very sort of stern tone, and Miss Campbell Howe's not no Fiona, no jam in our donut.
Yes.
It's no, this
you should write back. I thought I was your favourite.
Now you're telling me off. It comes across as cynical, doesn't it? And I kind of get this sense that there's this idea of the uncanny valley in animation, whereby if an animated figure is too close to a human being or looks too like a human being but not quite, you feel alienated from them. You don't feel any kind of rapport with them. And I think that copywriting like that is possibly going in that direction. It's when a brand's being over familiar with you, when you know you're not friends with them because they're a brand, you know, they're not a person. They're alienating themselves from you rather than creating that rapport with you.
Yeah. I mean, First Direct used to do, you know, again, the voice matched the brand really well because it was, you know, the brand's all black and white and, you know, quite clean, you know, but modern. And the voice was just very no nonsense. Mm. You know, it was clean, it was clear, it was modern. Mm. It wasn't wacky, it wasn't silly. Mm. It was just, you know, it was just kind of practical, and it made sense. It was personal, but it wasn't too over friendly.
Yeah.
You don't want your bank to get touchy feely, do you?
No, you don't.
You're a bank.
And after all of this, they do have a disclaimer, so don't tell everyone, Fiona, but you're our favourite. It's got this tiny asterisk by it.
Oh, where does that lead?
And then right at the end, it goes, it's important for us to highlight that we love all our customers fairly, and it would be rude for us to actually have favourites, but we do genuinely think a lot of you, so we hope this makes you smile. Surely it's just cynical marketing exercise.
Oh, that's appeasing the lawyers, isn't it?
Well, that's all we've got time for this episode of the Radix Copycast.
Oh?
You can follow Radix on Twitter at radix.com, and you'll find our website at radix-communications.com, where you can also sign up for our monthly e-newsletter for the latest copywriting tips and insights. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Bye.